Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Next Stage. This week on the podcast, we're super lucky to have on Guy Niv. Guy Niv is an Israeli professional cyclist racing for Israeli Startup Nation. That is the highest end team in the professional cycling. Guy Niv raced for the first time and the first time for an Israeli cyclist, the Tour de France last year. This was a great conversation. Loved hearing what he had to say. Very inspiring guy. And by the end of the podcast, a new friend. Got lots of love for this guy. Grateful that he did the podcast. And hope you guys find it as inspiring and motivating as I did. Lots of love and enjoy your week. Hey, Guy.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, man. Thanks for taking the time to set up this podcast and to join the conversation and, you know, have a chance and opportunity to kind of share your story.
Honored to be invited and looking forward.
Yeah, this is super cool. I was really honored to have the opportunity when your team, Israeli Cycling Academy, reached out and they're like, hey, we love your podcast. We'd love for you to, you know, have Niv on and tell the story. And I was like, this would be amazing. You know, an Israeli rider on an Israeli team. I just think, you know, that's a pretty easy podcast right there to be able to just allow you kind of to share your story and your come up and your background.
Okay. Where do we start with?
Yeah, man. So why don't you kind of tell everyone who you are and, you know, your racing, who you race for.
Okay. So my name is Guy Niv. I'm 27 years old, coming from the north of Israel. Currently living in a kibbutz named Dan. It's really near the border with Lebanon and Syria. A beautiful area, perfect for training, perfect for vacation. Amazing nature around. And I'm a professional cyclist for Israel Startup Nation team for the fourth season in a row.
Wow.
I grew up as a mountain biker. I did the change from mountain bike to the road scene quite late, only when I was 23 years old. But I'm definitely happy with it and happy living those life at the moment.
Yeah, man. I think that's... You correct me if I'm wrong, but are you the only world tour Israeli rider right now?
No, we have in the World Tour team four Israelis, and there is also the development team, the continental team, which have, I think, eight Israeli riders. Hopefully, wow, some of them will be able to join the World Tour team in the upcoming season. Some really good talents there.
That is so cool. Yeah. That is so super, super cool. So, you know, I'm super interested again how you fell into cycling. You said you started mountain biking, but what got you even into mountain biking? Like, was your dad a cyclist, or how did you discover the bike? You know, because is the cycling culture pretty popular in Israel?
Where I lived as a kid, there was a huge forest around, and cycling is pretty popular as a hobby. I mean, I grew up riding my bike in the weekends with my dad and with my older brother. And just when I was 10 years old, I wanted to join the local club, fell in love in this sport. I was really competitive as a kid, so I obviously wanted to start racing. And one thing led to another, and now this is my job. I did think about becoming a professional cyclist, but it was not my dream since I was super young, and yeah, it's more common to dream about becoming a football player in Israel than becoming a professional cyclist. But nowadays, this sport is really developing also in the racing scene. Still not big enough, but it's in the right direction.
Yeah, man, that's really interesting. What did you grow up for your dream? What was your dream to be? You know, you said you wasn't a dream to be a professional cyclist. So what was that dream?
Well, we kind of jump maybe to the end of the story, or no, it's not the end of the story, but it's just kind of the highlight of my career so far, which is the Tour de France. Last summer, I became the first Israeli ever to race the Tour de France. And this dream started when I was 13 years old. For my bar mitzvah, I asked my parents to go to France and go see the tour, go watch the tour. And that's where I kind of start dreaming about becoming a pro cyclist and about the Tour de France. To see this race as a kid, I still have really the memories from this trip. But yeah, I mentioned before, I grew up as a mountain biker, and that was was my big passion. But in 2015, Israel Cycling Academy, the first Israeli team, professional team, has started, and I started to realize that if I want to make it my career, you know, on the road, I really have the opportunity to do it, because this team is here to give the opportunity to Israeli cyclists to make it to the highest levels. And after 2 years, in the beginning of 2017, I decided that, okay, this is the time to try, to see if I have the passion also for road cycling and if I'm good at it. And luckily, already in the summer of 2017, I was a stagiaire in the Israel Cycling Academy team. Before that, I was part of the development team. Mm-hmm. And since 2018, I'm a pro in the pro team.
On the pro team.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. That's a very similar story to mine, you know, at finding the bike at around 12 to 13. You know, going to seeing the Tour de France and just being purely in love with it and loving that energy and that passion, and, you know, having the dream as well to like go to the Tour. I never made it there. So why don't you, you know, explain maybe what that was like? As I mean, I'm sure that just almost gave you goosebumps and was, you know, very, very overwhelming in a good way, where here you've spent your whole life working towards a dream, dreaming about a dream, and realizing there was nobody like yourself out there paving the way for you. There was no other Israeli riders who had done the tour for you to kind of, you know, follow in their footsteps. And so for you to do this, it was like, you know, something brand new for everything. And what was that like when you found out from the team you're going to go to the tour?
Well, first of all, it's a cliche, but it was really a dream come true. So
cycling is a cliche.
Yeah.
You know, it's that romantic. It's that beautiful.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, so obviously I was overwhelmed and super excited. But you mentioned the fact that there was never an Israeli before that have done it before. And it had for me two sides to this. One side was, it actually gave me a lot of motivation to know that now there is a young generation that can look up and see that it's possible, and I can give them the power to dream big, and they can see that it's possible to make it there. But on the other side, there was lots of pressure involved from the team, from the media, and obviously from myself. In the end of the day, I put on myself the most expectations. I'm always demand for myself maybe the most. So yeah, there was a lot of pressure involved, but I knew that if I'm going to be happy with knowing that I've done all the right preparation and gave everything I can and did the job for the team, I can be happy and satisfied. And luckily, I can say that my first experience with the Tour de France was a good one. Obviously, a really hard one, but was a good one that I can be proud of.
Yeah, what was, looking back on that experience, what's one thing you'll take away from that race? I mean, I'm sure there's hundreds of little things that you've learned from doing the tour, and I mean, I can't even imagine, but you know, you mentioned there was a lot of pressure on yourself, and you know, now that you've done it, what have you learned, like maybe setting forward to maybe do it again, or that you would do differently, or that you have learned?
For sure, I would like to say that I was in my first Tour de France with a goal that was dedicated by my team to finish, to be the first Israeli making it to Paris, to the Champs-Élysées. And as a pro athlete, just to finish a race, it's not the type of goal that you normally give yourself when you go for a race. Obviously, a Grand Tour is a bit different. Mainly when it's your first or second Grand Tour. But still, I wanted to do more. And I know that the next time that I will be there, I'm going to ask my team to give me the place in the squad, only if they believe that I can do bigger things than just to finish, because it was kind of frustrating to know that every day, of course, I took care for bottles and I took care for my teammates in the earlier part of the stages, but when it came down to the finish, I was not allowed to be involved because my team didn't want me to crash, or I was not allowed to go in any breakaway because I would just need to save my legs, because the goal of the team for me was just to finish. I know why, I understand why, but of course...
You didn't get to really race.
Yeah, it's a race. It's not an Ironman that you just like a master that training for that and just want to finish it.
Totally. That's so interesting. Wow, this is really cool and interesting hearing this, because I see it both sides very, very well, where, you know, like you said, you see the perspective of your team, where just you finishing and starting that race is history for your country. You know, that's incredible. It's monumental. And like you said, just you finishing and starting that race already created so many dreams and paths for so many young kids. It's incredible. Like, you, the amount of motivation you probably, you know, lights that you've turned on in other kids to want to go ride their bike is probably incredible.
Exactly.
In your country. And so that's inspiring. But what's also, you know, a bit, I can see on your side very well, because I'm the rider and, you know, I don't like to be told what I can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And in a race, that can be very frustrating when here you have the opportunity to be at the Tour de France and you don't have the opportunity, even if, I mean, you probably felt good on one of those days where, who knows, maybe you could have been in a breakaway, and, you know, a breakaway is, that's an incredible thing to be in the, like, those early breakaways. You know, I remember I've had a lot of friends, like Tom Skunes, who was in the early breakaway and got the KOM jersey, Taylor Finney, who was in the early breakaway at the beginning of the tour and got the KOM jersey. So I see your frustration where, if you do get in those early breakaways at the beginning of the tour, opportunities like that can open up. And also, you never know the type of opportunities that will open up when you are allowed to race and let you kind of do your thing. So I see it. That's a hard dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, obviously I understand why it was so important for my team to handle my race like they handle it. It did create a big buzz in Israel when I finished the tour, and they wanted to make sure that it's happening. But if you ask me about my next experience or what I will want to do different, so for sure I will want to come to race. Obviously, let's put the things on, like, be honest. I was, in some of the days, I was not able to do much more than what I did. But in some days, I might.
It's your first Tour de France, though.
Yeah, exactly. I still need to develop myself and to be a better rider and to be one of, let's say, strong riders in the peloton to be able to do much bigger things. But there's still hopefully a few more chances in the future for me to do that.
Yeah, that's do you feel a little bit less stress and pressure maybe on your shoulders now that there's a few more Israeli riders on the team, so you don't maybe feel so alone, or like you don't feel like the pressure all falls on you?
Yeah, we have the DNA of this team always want to promote the Israeli riders on one hand and to give them the opportunities, and the other Israelis are doing well as well. We had another two Israeli riders that have done grand tours, the Giro, the Vuelta, and there is a young sprinter that already won a small UCI race. So the other Israelis are doing well, and we all, let's say, share the pressure. But on the other hand, this team is becoming one of the leading teams on the World Tour team, on the World Tour scene, signing some of the really big names on the Pro Peloton, such as Chris Froome, for example. So this team have ambitions to be competitive in all the big races, and now it's one of the leading teams. And there is pressure involved on me, but on the other riders as well. So,
yeah, that's interesting, man. Because your team has—I remember when it first started. It was just Israeli Academy, and you guys had the black and green kits. And I remember racing you guys at a small race in, I don't know, maybe Germany or Czech, I forget, when I was on the BMC development team. And it's just really inspiring and incredible seeing a program like that turn into now, like you said, one of the leading, you know, teams and cycling programs out there, you know, with some of the best technology, with bikes and equipment and racers and internationality. Tell us maybe what that's like, you know, kind of being on Israeli and being with, you know, since they signed these bigger riders, has the atmosphere or the culture kind of changed or shifted?
I think that this season, the first training camp, we already felt that this team has changed.
In business.
Yeah, exactly. This year, the squad of this team is definitely much stronger than the past years, and we are aiming for really the biggest goals in pro cycling. But I think what's nice to still see is that there is still a mission for this team, which is this country. It's not only about sport. Okay, of course, now there is some pro riders here that are here to win races, but there's still a mission for this team that's related to the country that it's representing. And it's to be ambassadors for this country. This country quite often gets to be on the media for not the right reasons, or maybe not everyone knows the whole story. And I'm proud.
Totally. Negative connotations when you're not even, you know, that nobody's actually there. And that's, again, why I love this opportunity to speak to you and, you know, for you to share.
So I want to share
the beauty of.
I want to share a small story about me racing the tour. And there was a small group of people, like 10 to 20 people, pro-Palestine protest every day, where they were standing at some point during the stage. And I was quite amazing to see that some of the really big names on the pro peloton came to me and asked me how I feel about it and what's my opinion about them. And some of them even just wanted to give their opinion about them. And I was happy to see that some people feel like I feel about my country, and some people who don't know about it wants to ask and wants to learn and wants to hear my story, because they don't really know what's going on here. And I'm not saying that this country is perfect. It's far from being it. And the fact that I'm Israeli, riding in an Israeli team, it doesn't mean that I agree with everything that this government or this country is doing. But I know what I'm representing, and I know who are the people in this country and what is the history of this country. And I can tell you that I'm proud to be a kind of an ambassador for this team. And it starts with just being on the big races, and also with the small talk that happening in the peloton during a race with some riders from all around the world. It really gives me extra motivation to know what I'm representing and what is the mission of this team besides sport.
Wow, that you couldn't say it any better. I couldn't be any more motivated, and I think it's just, the more I speak to you on this podcast, the more I feel more honored to have this opportunity to hear you, and because that's, I feel the exact same way. I don't view any country as perfect. You know, I don't. There's definitely, you know, so many issues here in America. You know, and there's so many issues in every country that I've been in. But the beautiful thing as well is there's also incredible beauty in every country that I've been in, and there's incredibly nice people in every country that I've been in, you know. And I think a lot of times we get so caught up with, you know, watching the news or hearing this or that, and we start to judge a country off of one thing that's happened in one place, you know. And we don't actually, you know, I don't like to, you know, I always just like to visit countries,
exactly.
And, you know, see the beauty, because, like I said, there's rude and mean people here in America. You know, there's bad people here in America, like really bad. You know, there's good people here. There's good people in Israel. There's good people in France. There's, you know, and that's what makes this world beautiful, is when we can come together and, you know, for us to allow this conversation. And, you know, I think it's beautiful that you view it as more than sport, because for me, looking back now, to be able to say that I spoke to you, you know, and just knowing what you represent, and that you were one of the first, you're the first Israel rider to do the tour, and the message that you're just spreading to your country. I mean, it just is, I for sure, nobody who even is listening to this will really be able to resonate with the depth, I feel like, that you're making with the impact in your country with cycling, you know. And it's super exciting, and it's so cool that you just you view that. And I think that's that. I mean, if I was you, I would view that as like that's a big part of your career. You know, they'll be the Israel riders who will come up, and you know, racing won't be as big of a deal in it. It'll be about them more just targeting results at that point. But the fact that you've now set this path for these, you know, these kids is just remarkable.
Yeah, hopefully. The main message for me when it comes to speaking with some others about my country is, first of all, I ask them if they ever visit my country. And normally they say no. And then it comes down to, okay, so I really recommend you to go and visit. And yeah, as you said, it's hopefully in what related to cycling, we are making a pass here for the young generation. And in 5, 10, or maybe even 20 years, it will not be a big deal that an Israeli rider is riding the Tour de France, because it's part of life.
Yeah, it'll just be common. Yeah. Do you feel like you've started to get more of a confidence or more of a voice since kind of doing the Tour de France, and since having those other riders come up to you and ask your opinion and talk to you about these, political things sometimes? You know, do you feel like you're getting more comfortable with speaking your mind and sharing your backing, or, you know, because that can be intimidating to be at the Tour de France and have these people out there, you know, doing stuff, and then you're having these riders who are coming up to you, and it's your first Tour de France. That could be pretty intimidating to, you know, but have you found that, like, you actually were like, wow, these guys respect me and want to learn, and, you know, I can really use my voice for a positive, and share my country, share what it's about in a positive way?
Yeah, I feel privileged that I'm able to do it. I would not say that I feel like I'm still, let's say, a bit of an unknown rider in the pro peloton. Maybe now more riders know me, but I'm not one of the most famous characters. But when riders such as, for example, Richie Porte come to speak to me, and it gives me confidence and power to know that, first of all, I'm getting respect here, and second thing, as you mentioned, yeah, I can share,
positive change, yeah,
about my country. So it's great way for me to feel like I can give back to my country. Yeah, it's something that when you grew up in Israel, you always normally you've been raised about the history of this country, and when you are 18 years old, it's your time to serve the country back, when there is an obligation to go to the army for 2 years in Israel. So when I did my decision to go to sport, to go to the excellent athlete program in the army, I knew that in some way I skip about the opportunity to give back to my country on the normal way. But nowadays I know that I can give back to my country as an athlete, and it was not an easy decision. We can talk about it later, but now I know that athletes can give back to the country, such as a soldier in the army.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's many ways for people to do good in their country and to spread awareness. And I mean, like I said, there's no better way to create awareness of the bike and show these kids that, oh, this doesn't just have to be something that I ride from point A to point B. This is something that I can use to, you know, travel the world, to see the world, to better my life with. And that's so incredible that, I mean, it's just a bike, and yet you can see the world, and, you know, you can still serve your country in that aspect and inspire, you know, millions in your country to. And that's, again, it's talking to you. And I've had the pleasure, I think you raced at Tour of Utah, correct?
Yeah.
I think you were there.
I actually remember you from my very first race in the Pro Peloton, summer 2017, as a stagiaire. I did the Tour of Utah and the Colorado Classic.
And yeah.
Those were my first races in the Pro Peloton. And definitely remember there flying in the, I think it was second or third state in Colorado.
Yeah, attacking from the gun. 3,000 meters above sea level.
I suffered like hell, but yeah.
Yeah, Breckenridge. That was a great. Yeah. That was a. When I had the pleasure to talk to David Miller, we talked about those magical days you have on the bike.
Okay.
And that was one of my magical days. It was where you just feel, you know, you just don't feel it, and you just feel good, and you feel free. And have you had a race that where you felt like where you felt just those that magical moment on the bike where you felt like, all right, this is awesome. You just felt free.
Yeah, of course. We call them the no chain days. Like, you don't feel the chain, you just pedal and there is no resistance, there is no nothing. You just can go for all day long. I need to pick one of those days. That's what you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah, tell us one of those days.
Okay, I want
those days are usually clear in our minds. So
I can pick one of those days, but I wanna actually pick one of those days that I've done, to my opinion, and also for the leader of the team at this day, a pretty amazing job for the team. It was not for me. Was second or third stage in Adriatic Ionica. It's not a big race in Italy, I think a 0.1, but we had Ben Hermans in the GC, second overall, and Remco Evenepoel, a young Belgium, still, well, it's funny to say still that he was in the beginning of his career, because he's still in the beginning of his career, but
yeah, but 22 now or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it was really the first year for him as a pro. And he went on the attack for 50K to go. And he was a bit out of the GC, like a minute or a minute and a half out, like behind our leader. But if you give him more and more time, so he would take it and will win the race. And yeah, somehow I left as the only rider with my teammate, with Ben, and he was second in GC, so there was another team that had to pull, but they for some reason were not worried about Remco, and it came down to me riding almost the last 50K alone and making sure that Ben's still gonna save his second place on GC. One of those days that I was just riding full, feeling good, don't know how. And those days are not coming so often, but of course, it's nice one of those days.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing to be able to feel that on the bike, and it's funny how that just those days are so hard to come by, it feels like, but yet it can inspire you to put in so many training hours or suffer so many other times in other races. It's super inspiring.
Exactly.
You I want to kind of maybe talk about about your life off the bike, and just curious, you know, speaking to you, you just incredibly smart and incredibly calm and aware. And I just want to know, how do you do that? Or what do you practice kind of like at home? Do you do any meditation or anything of that sort?
I used to work with a mental coach for the past year, and I do have my routine for relaxing myself, and let's say before big events, I used to start my day with 10 minutes of simulations that I'm actually listening to a recording that we did together, where I'm leaving the one of the days of the race. If we take back to the tour, so I was living for 2 months before the tour. Every day I started with 10 days of simulation in my mind about me being in the tour and knowing what's happening now. I really believe that when you come to the day of the race, it helps your body to know what's going to come. And when the brain is ready for it, the body is ready for it as well. I'm not into yoga or anything of those kind of meditation, but I do my stretching routine and my...
No, let's go back to that. I mean, back to where you were talking about the 10 minutes prior to the tour. I mean, that's meditation with premeditation inside of it. And that's, I've meditate daily. And from meditation, I'll do about 15 minutes in the morning and maybe 15 minutes in the evening. But I'll do exactly what you said, where you, if there's something in your life that you, you know, a goal you want, or, I want to do this at the tour or this, or you'll say it in your mind and you'll view it. And that premeditation, it's incredible how it does come to, fruition, you know, it comes to life. And, I think that's so cool that you did that before the tour. And
yeah, I actually did it before I was selected to the squad of the tour. But for me, it was obvious that if I want to be there, I need to start live this moment in my mind first to be able to live that in real life later.
That is so wise. That is so, so wise. Where did you learn that?
Where did you pick that up? From my mental coach. I'm really thankful for this guy named Eitan Azaria that really helped me to be as ready as I can to this big event. Because it's
interesting. I worked with a mental coach as well, but during my best kind of final years when I was racing.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I've realized, you know, I think that's almost the best type of coaching. You know, we pay all this money for the training on the physical, but then all this emotional stress and mental stress kind of adds up, and then we don't take care of it in our mind. And so having one of those mental coaches where they can help teach us to kind of store and organize and filter through things, yeah. I think it's crucial for young kids to learn.
Exactly. When you grew up as an athlete, and almost all of us growing up as athletes, we don't just wake up when we are 24, 25 and becoming pro athletes. It's starting when you are 10 or let's say 13, 14 years old. You just always in an endless race of the next training, the next race, the next goal. And one of the things that he told me that, look, you are doing everything right. You do your training, you work on your nutrition, you do the stretching, the massage, the sleeping hours, you do it everything, but you need to do less. Like we had the sentence says less is more. And he seriously like gave me mm-hmm. tasks to go in the afternoon with a cold, nice beer to the river here next to my house and just chill out and let my body, like not physically, just like my brain, my, I don't know how to call it, to recover as well, because it's not all about physiologic. It's also about our soul, of our mind, our brain. And this part also needs to have been taken care of, you know. It's like you said, we put money on coaches, but sometimes we forget that we are also human beings and we need to take care also mm-hmm. to this side in our life.
Yeah, that's so wise. That is that took a long time for me to kind of figure out, to just kick back and chill like that, where and still every day I feel like that's one of the biggest issues actually for us, especially growing up in sport, where you're so used to, like you said, just going next goal, next race, next training, You get so caught up in always, like, if you're not doing something, you feel like you're falling behind. When in actuality, it's like you said, to be able to just sit back, kick up, relax, you know, that actually is going to free your mind up to then open it to more things later. And yeah, that's super. This is super. I wasn't, it, you know, this is so great to have this conversation and, you know, hear about your philosophy, and I'm loving it. I'm really loving it.
Cool. Thank you very much.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, tell us kind of what you got going on for the next type of racing coming up, because I know some races have gotten canceled right now. So what's, before we, you know, start to kind of wind down this podcast, why don't you give us a quick run through of maybe what your schedule might look like?
I will, but as you said, the schedule is
it's hard.
Changing pretty much
every day,
couple of days. Now, to be honest, it like an hour ago or 2 hours ago, my DS called me and said that there is a new rule in France that if you're not coming from one of the Schengen country, you need to come from, you need to be in Europe 30 days before you're allowed to go into France, which I don't really understand this rule, but I was supposed to do the French program, like to do two one-day races in Ardèche-Drôme and then to do Paris-Nice. And now, I don't know. Maybe the team will change me to do Tirreno-Adriatico. But yeah, later I'm supposed to do Coppi Bartoli and the Basque Country and Tour of the Alps, and it feels a bit strange still this season to plan ahead so much when there's still too much unknown with what's gonna be with racing and yeah everything. At least I can say that I'm happy to know that I'm vaccinated already. Israel is actually quite fast.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. So at least
really ahead of time.
Yeah, at least I know that, and that gives me confidence that I'm not supposed to have like a, you know, 2 days before the race somehow positive results that will take me out of a race, because to be honest, it was one of my biggest fears before the Tour de France last summer that we have to do the PCR test before the race. And what's going to happen if 3 days before the race, I'm going to have a positive result, because there is also some false positives. And maybe all this dream will just disappear 3 days before.
Wow.
So, yeah, at least I know that I'm vaccinated. And in that case, I should be fine. But in everything related to my racing program at the moment, I don't really know.
Still in the air.
I don't know what to say about this.
That is so interesting that France won't allow you to be in the country and race 30 days prior, even when you've had the vaccine. That's super interesting. I wonder why that is.
The problem is that there are still no international agreement between countries about, let's call it the green passport, we call it here in Israel, that the people that are vaccinated can just travel around without any self-isolation, quarantine or anything. But I guess it will happen in the next few months, or at least I hope it will happen. But at the moment,
yeah,
it's not the situation.
Yeah, that's super, super unfortunate. Super sorry, man. That's a bummer to, because then it makes your training a little bit difficult on how to plan for things. Yeah. But we learned how to do all that last year, and we pushed through. And we're, you know, I feel like we're better off now, you know. And but you know, guy, this has been a great podcast and a great conversation, and I really hope that next time you're here in Utah, you know, whether that be for Tour of Utah or anything, you hit me up and we can hang out and go for a ride, or you know, go get some dinner or something, because I really enjoyed your point of view on life and your perspective, and Just also your courage and your leadership that you've taken, you know, even probably a few years ago, you probably didn't even know it, you know, but now you're in a state of true leadership of what you just did for your country. And I just think it's, I really respect that. I think that's super cool. And thanks again for being on the podcast, my man. So before we jet, where can people give you a follow on social media?
Just the normal channels, which are Facebook and Instagram for me. I don't use Twitter. I know that in the US it's quite big, but here, not really. Or at least I'm focusing on Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, thank you very much for having me. I was really honored to get
your, really appreciate
your
it.
Call and to be in your podcast. And for sure, next time I'll be in Utah, I'll give you a call because I really like Utah and I need to be there again. I was there already 2 times, but for sure back again. Yes.
Were you here the year Ben won the overall?
Yeah.
That was a great year, man. Congrats really nice to that. That was cool. Us. Very cool, man.
And the end of those that comes together, right?
Yeah, and it's great. And Ben, he's a great guy. I've known him from racing with BMC, and he was always nice. And so that was cool for him. But, you know, Guy, I wish you the best of luck, man. I wish you the best of health and love, man. And just keep going out there and inspiring.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
I'm a fan, man. I'm a big fan. So appreciate the love, dude. All right, man.
Ciao.
You have a great day, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks for being on the